Welcome back, Question Medicine 2018. I am Andrew Bill down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida, and today I have a doozy for you. I have one that has been probably 5 or 6 years in the making, to be honest with you. I have known what I'm about to tell you for quite some time, but it is quite controversial, so I have strayed from it. And you know that I don't stray from anything that's controversial in questioning medicine. In fact, that's part of why questioning medicine was invented, was because Joe and I needed a platform in which we could speak out, in which we could say what we knew to be true about medical evidence. But this topic that I'm going to talk about today is so controversial, not because it's actually controversial. When you look at the evidence, it probably is actually quite clear. It's controversial because people often let their emotions slip into it. It's like vaccines. We know the evidence is quite clear that vaccines work. In fact, next to clean drinking water or clean water in general, it's probably the number one invention or number one medical advancement we've ever had. We know there is a huge anti-vaccination movement. Why? Because people let their emotions get into it. They all of a sudden allow the N of one, or, well, I knew one person who knew one person who had a brother or a cousin of one person that had this one event happen, and they don't account for the millions and millions of lives saved. So, in case you have not picked up on it already, this podcast is about breast cancer. Not necessarily breast cancer as a whole, but more about the screening mammography. Yes, the screening test that is the mammography. And I have to say that this, I'm only gonna do this once. If you are very heated about this, please stop listening now. With that said, it is good to be back. All right, welcome back. Andrew Bilt, Question Medicine 2018. And as I said in the intro, this has been a long time coming, and I hesitated on saying it. Dusty and I were talking the other morning, and she was asking me, why are you so passionate against mammographies? And then she was questioning, I was like, well, you know, they don't really save lives, kind of going into it. But I wasn't going fully into it. I wasn't completely getting into it. And at the end of it, she said, well, I think you need to strengthen your argument, because I think I still kind of would believe in it based on what you just told me. So with that being said, I need to put it all together, just get it all out there, and let's just start from the top, work to the bottom. So I know women and doctors, all the people out there will say that the benefits outweigh the risk, but those individuals I don't think have actually read the literature. And if when this podcast gets done, you feel that the benefits outweigh the risk, then you probably need to go read the research yourself before you just make that blanket statement. Now, Cochrane doesn't necessarily think that it's beneficial, but then people will argue Cochrane doesn't think that anything is beneficial. So why would we believe Cochrane? Who cares about the Cochrane review? Well, again, it's not that Cochrane doesn't think that it's necessarily beneficial. It's just not as beneficial as people want you to believe. According to the Cochrane data and the United States Preventative Services Task Force meta-analysis, the annual mammography yields 15 to 20% relative risk reduction in breast cancer mortality. A 15% relative risk reduction this is key, I'm going to give it to you right off the bat here, translates to a 1 in 2,000 benefit, where for every 2,000 women screened with mammography over a 10-year period, one fewer individual will die from breast cancer. There it is, 1 in 2,000 over a 10-year period will be prevented or will be saved, quote unquote, from breast cancer. And if you want to translate that down into a single year, you would just take 2,000 times 10. So it'd be, you need every 20,000 women per year, one is going to not die or be prevented from dying of breast cancer. And finally, the other argument that I get about mammographies, or maybe the reason I haven't done this podcast any sooner than this, is that I hear people say, well, it's a woman's choice and you're not a woman, so you should have no say, or you wouldn't know unless you were a woman. You are absolutely correct. I am not a woman, but I am a man and I have a prostate. And I can tell you that the numbers needed to benefit for prostate cancer or prostate cancer screening are along the lines or even better than mammography. And I don't get a PSA. So with that being said, I can almost assure you and say, if I was a woman, I wouldn't get a mammogram. And we know that women and providers, really, everyone, has been kind of tricked or deceived into believing that mammograms are the cure-all, the end-all, the be-all, the thing that will make you better. This has been found over and over in studies over again, but one particular one that I'm citing is from the International Journal of Epidemiology, Women's Perceptions of the Benefits of Mammography Screening, a population-based survey in 4 countries. Basically, they called women up on the phone. They said, hey, what do you think about breast cancer screening? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And almost 3 out of every 4 women believe that screening mammogram cuts in half the rate of breast cancer mortality, and that 10 years of regular screening will prevent 10 or more breast cancer deaths per 1,000 women. Again, we know that not to be true. In fact, that's not only not true, it's 20 times greater. It's 2,000 times greater benefit there. So let's get into some of the evidence. Let's get some of the articles and see if I can really break this down for you. One of the first articles I'm going to talk about comes from the Annals of Internal Medicine titled, Is It Time to Initiate Another Breast Cancer Screening Trial? All right, in this paper, they hypothesized you could assess the quality of randomization by looking at the non-breast cancer deaths. And that means that although we can debate the utility of mammography, and we can say, well, it's really good, or oh, it's really bad, I don't think anyone in the world will say, oh, mammographies, they definitely affect, or they definitely have a positive outcome on the non-breast cancer deaths. I don't think anyone in the world says, listen, mammographies, they do such a wonderful job at saving lives. They actually save pancreatic cancer lives, car accident lives, deaths from just random freak of nature pianos crashing on your head. They save everything. No one argues that fact. So when you look at these studies that we have and you say, well, if it is a true randomized trial, then randomly the non-breast cancer deaths, all other things equal, should also be equal. And if they're not equal, then you have to look at it and say, ooh, something's a little fishy there. Something is outside of normal because, again, this should be randomized. So without getting into too many details about kind of what they all did as far as the different calculations, they set up boundaries and they said, listen here, for these specific boundaries, the non-breast cancer deaths were random and equal. But if you were outside the boundaries, these pre-specified boundaries, then you had way more fishy conclusions. You had way more car accidents than on one group than compared to another group that would have not necessarily just matched up with a quote-unquote random chance. And in that case, maybe you did some fishy calculations, or maybe your blinding wasn't as blinding as you thought that it was, in which case your trial results were skewed to maybe favor one thing or another, i.e., you maybe skewed your results to favor the results of mammography, to favor a benefit shown in mammography. Well, in this analysis of 11 trials, 6 were within the boundaries and 5 were outside of the boundaries. Trials with the results within the boundaries were deemed consistent, and those outside of the boundaries were deemed inconsistent, which again makes sense that if you're outside the boundaries, that's maybe an inconsistent randomization, and we need to look into this just a little bit further. Now, of the 6 trials within the boundaries, 5 used proper randomization to allocate women individually to mammography or to a control group. Of the 5 trials outside the boundaries, the ones where we say, something maybe isn't right here, something potentially is unreliable, of those 5, only 1 used individual randomization. This just smells of bad trials. This smells of biases just leaking out of it. Now, I'm not saying it did happen, but something seems off here. Let's dig a little bit further, because when you look at the forest plot inside of this study, you see something quite interesting. The consistent trials suggest that screening results in a 15% reduction of breast cancer death, while the inconsistent trials showed a much more pronounced reduction in breast cancer deaths at 29%. So if you were inconsistent, if your randomization practices were a little not up to par, if you will, you found that you had double the rates or double the life saves of breast cancer deaths. This makes your trial look even better because look at these huge results you're getting. But the ultimate question for any cancer screening program is whether the reduction in cancer mortality relates to a saved life. Meaning if I say, Mrs. Jones, if you get your mammogram, well, this mammogram will not only save you from breast cancer at 78, it'll also save you from dying at 78. Or do I say, Mrs. Jones, if you get this mammography, I can tell you that at 78 years old, you will die. You just won't die of breast cancer. I don't know what you'll die from, but statistically speaking, you will die at the same age. It'll just be from something else. Well, when they looked at that, again, wouldn't you know, when you looked at the consistent trials, the ones that had good randomization, point estimate of 0.97 with a confidence interval from 0.92 to 1.02. That's almost completely, it is completely actually crossing one, no statistical difference. And the point estimate at 0.97, I mean, that is almost like literally drinking water. That is up and down nothing as far as benefit. When you looked at the inconsistent trials, the ones that were a little, meh, this is for all-cause mortality now, or saving lives, 0.94 with confidence intervals from 0.85 to 1.05. Larger confidence intervals there, but a lower point estimate. And so what happens typically is you combine all these trials together. When you combine them all together, you can show a potential for a saved life benefit when you combine them all together. But when you look at them consistently or inconsistently, it would seem to suggest, as the author suggests, and I suggest, that mammographies do not save lives. All right. That's the first article. Let's go to the next article. The next article is in the New England Journal of Medicine, Effect of Three Decades of Screening Mammography on Breast Cancer Incidence. Now, this paper does a great job in that it starts off with a very interesting line that I think we all need to remember. There are two requirements for screening to reduce the rate of death from cancer. First, screening must advance the time of diagnosis of cancers that are destined to cause death. And second, early treatment of these cancer must confer some advantage over treatment at clinical presentation, meaning we need to find it early, and then we need to have a treatment that if we do find it early, we can help individuals live longer. This makes total sense. Well, this study, it got data from the National Health Interview Survey, the women 40 years of age or older who underwent screening mammographies, and then they trend the data on the incidence and their survival rates, and then they were able to take that, apply it to the U.S. Census or the women's census. So they found, as you would expect, over time, starting in the late 70s and early 80s, after Betty Ford's diagnosis of breast cancer, women started to get screened more. And then, because we are screening more, we found more. The rate of cancer found per 100,000 women rose from 112 to 234 per 100,000. Again, that's really good. This is awesome. We're screening more, we're finding more, and if we're finding more, then bam, that should mean that we're preventing more. Not preventing more cancer, we're preventing more metastatic cancer. We're preventing more deaths from cancer, right? We're preventing more distant cancer. That's what we should find, right? Well, the large increase in cases of early stage cancer, again, from 112 to 234 per 100,000 women, translate to an absolute increase of 122 cancers, which is wonderful, except it reflected that we were finding more cases of localized disease, which I will touch on in just a minute and why that's actually important. But are we finding more distant cancers? Well, unfortunately, much smaller decreases in the cases of late stage cancer, from 102 to 94 per 100,000. That's an absolute decrease of 8 per 100,000. So to put this in perspective, if only 8 of these 122 additional cases that we're finding, we went from 112 to 234, 122 additional early cases, but we're only decreasing the rates of distant metastatic cancer by 8, then we can effectively say that there were 114 women or 114 excess cases of breast cancer that were detected that didn't need to be detected. We, quote unquote, over-diagnosed these women. And remember when I say that most of these new findings were maybe local? Well, The small reduction in cases of late-stage cancer did occur because it has been confined to regional or node-positive disease. And you might say, well, why does that really matter, Andrew? I mean, it's breast cancer. Breast cancer is breast cancer. Well, not necessarily. You see, those node-positive local regional diseases can successfully be treated with an expected 5-year survival rate of 85%, as the authors point out. Unfortunately, the number of women in the United States who present with distant disease, metastatic disease, only 25% of whom will survive for 5 years. These women appear not to be affected by screening. So we're decreasing our rate of distant disease, but it seems that driving number seems to be because of local disease. And we're finding all these extra, but it seems to be that we're overdiagnosing a significant number of women that would have never necessarily been diagnosed. They would have lived their life forever without this diagnosis of breast cancer. Now, finally, in this piece, which is, again, it's an excellent article, the authors try to estimate how many women have actually been overdiagnosed over the last 30 years. And this gets a little complicated because it depends on what's your baseline risk of breast cancer. Does the rates of breast cancer incidence at baseline stay constant, or does it increase? And it didn't matter how you calculated this. And I will say that they calculated this quite conservatively. I mean, it's kind of like counting calories. If you're on a diet and you're counting calories, you want to overestimate how many calories are in something to be on the safe side. When you're trying to calculate something like how many women are harmed by your screening mammographies, you want to underestimate it, because it makes you feel bad that we are doing these tests that hurt women, that overdiagnose women, and they, as you can tell from the opening, women think that it's benefiting them. So with their conservative estimates, no matter how you calculated it, over 1 million women in the last 30 years have been overdiagnosed with cancer. And they say, and I will leave this podcast, this is going to be part one of a two-part, I'm going to release the next part here shortly. They end the piece with a line that I just have to quote, because it's unbelievable and it kind of leaves you chills if you think about it. Our study raises serious questions about the value of screening mammography. It clarifies that the benefit of mortality reduction is probably smaller and the harm of overdiagnosis probably larger than has previously been recognized. And although no one can say with certainty which women have cancer that are overdiagnosed, there is certainty about what happens to them. They undergo surgery, they undergo radiation therapy, they undergo hormonal therapy for 5 years or more. Chemotherapy or a combination of these treatments for abnormalities that otherwise would not have caused illness. Don't get me wrong, I love breasts, you can ask my wife, but I don't like screening mammographies for this exact reason. The overdiagnosis number is real. The actual finding of cancer is real. It's 100% real, but it's not real at the rate that we wish it was. We wish it was better. We need it to be better. We know that antibiotics work for acute sinusitis, but we don't give it because the number needed to treat doesn't seem to outweigh the number needed to harm as far as nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. I think when you start to dig into these numbers, and on part two, you'll see even more numbers that will really shock you. I think hopefully by the end of this, you also will say, maybe this is not as beneficial as I thought. In about a week, I will post part two to this podcast. So until next time, keep quest and questioning.